must first of all remember that this system was not originally designed with black people in mind.
Right on, brother. Right on. Right on.
And it definitely was not prepared for black people to, in the end, begin to demand their rights and an equal share in this country, which they've died for.
Right on.
Hey, and we definitely are not going back to Africa. For us to exist in this system, we must first of all realize that we've got to form our own black America within, but without white America. Already we've begun to do this with this little handshake that we got that they keep trying to copy, and we keep improving on. And when they go and get their hair fluffed out, we braid ours. We're doing our own thing. We are kids.
Right on. Right on, bro. Right on.
We have, first of all, got to protect our brothers and sisters from themselves and from those within the community that would rip them up. We have got to do this. Sacrificing our sisters to the streets and our brothers to the drugs that are running around. So now we have got to turn that around and take from them. I believe in taking. Go to school and get that knowledge, but get it with that black awareness always. What I'm saying to you is that you've got to carry this right on and power to the people and black is beautiful and black is now out into your homes. Talk to your little brothers and sisters. Talk to your mothers and fathers. Talk to the people that you can relate to and begin to lift this whole thing up on a total basis. We've got to side up to that sister because that sister on the street corner is someone's sister. We've got to take care of our president. Take care of our future. This is how we begin.
Shout out to all of our listeners out there who are tuning in to the Black Millennial Podcast. Give yourselves a big round of applause. Yes, you deserve it. You deserve it. Big round of applause.
Thank you guys for listening.
Yes, yes. Thank you guys. Thank you. Thank you. We are very blessed to have you guys all tuning in. We are here to present the Black Millennial Podcast. This is the first piece of the cartridge in the round of ammunition that is Black Millennial Podcast. Yes. The goal of the Black Millennial Podcast, or why the Black Millennial Podcast exists, is basically bringing you guys everything all Black Millennials. We're going to touch on current topics. We're going to speak on Black history, American history, how blacks have played a role and continue to play a role in American history.
We're going to talk about the influence we have on pop culture. We're going to talk about empowering ourselves in order to bring about some of the things that a lot of us desire to see happen, because I think we're farther along than we realize. But we need to get a little more organized. We need to get a little more decisive in our actions. And I think a lot of the things we want will fall in our lap.
Not only fall in our lap, but also we'll be able to be in the driver's seat. This will bring about the dialogue that will place us from being in the back or in the passenger and place us at the hands of the steering wheel, ready to press the gas or the brake whenever necessary. We really just want to be able to allow all of our listeners, speakers, whoever, to just speak their mind and to speak openly and freely. And for those who are receiving their message or their statements, to just look at it with an open mind and have open eyes and ears.
Always. We always got to be open-minded. And if not, you don't have to agree. You don't have to... You don't have to just be gung-ho about their idea, but give it thought. You know, as a person, as a human, you are obligated, I feel like, to at least think about what another person is saying, whether you agree or not. And if it's rational, then from there you can begin to find a common place with that person, or you can begin to find some type of middle ground. And that's how we'll really go a long way.
Middle ground is important, guys, very important. Throughout this show, we're going to continually attempt to reach middle ground from all angles, from all sides, just so that everyone can come together, as my co-host has stated, and we can, you know, we can bring about solutions, real solutions to real problems. We can just understand what it is, what this reality truly is, and the role we play in changing it for the future. Yes, we will get into introductions. First, I am your host, one of your hosts. I am co-hosting with another. I am Porter Prince. Short introduction into me. I am from Texas. I met my co-host at Texas A&M University during my undergraduate career. I also went to graduate school in Houston at UT Health, health major at both schools. I am a first-generation African student. My parents came from West Africa over here. My perspective on black people in general and of African Americans is very broad and wide. Grew up amongst African Americans, grew up with the background of having African parents, and also had friends of just multiple cultures. So my vantage stretches far boundaries, and I'm going to use that to connect with all the listeners, and I want to listen to y'all's stories, y'all's background, so I'm able to do the same thing, find that middle ground so we can understand where we're coming from. And that's me, always asking questions to myself, and that's the way I learn better, just to get an objective picture. Yes, give Porter Prince a round of applause, everybody. On to the next host.
How y'all doing? Called me Black Godfather. Like he said, I met him at Texas A&M. Right now, I go to Langston University in Oklahoma, in Langston, Oklahoma. It is an HBCU. I'm graduating in May with a degree, Bachelor's of Science in Agricultural Studies. I am a Soils and Crop Science major, if that matters. But, you know, I don't really have too much to say, but if you want to know anything, get in contact with us. We'll talk. I'm very open because I want this to be, you know, give and take. So, yeah.
Black Godfather, that introductory clip that you chose to put into this pilot episode, man, I love it. I think it speaks on a lot of different aspects of the black consciousness. What made you choose that specific clip, man? How did this, what spoke out to you about it, and why did you decide to use it?
It's funny you asked me that, but coincidentally, the movie is about a pimp. It's from the 1970s movie, The Mac, where a man named Goldie just gets out of prison, basically, and he has to decide, what does he want to do? Does he want to continue going to the streets, or does he want to help his brother, who was speaking what we heard? And he did decide to go to the streets, but you can tell he had a dilemma. It was more of a decision out of a comfort. He knew he could go get a dollar. You know, he knew he could. He knew what he had there was for sure. And, you know, other things was a gamble. And I don't think he was prepared to take that type of risk. But to answer your question, when I saw the scene, it was back when I first told you about the show. And it just spoke volumes to me. It was funny because I had never seen the movie before, and I was like, you know, I want to check it out because I'm a connoisseur of old movies, and I was interested. So I watched it, and you know, that scene came on, and it was mind blowing, you know, because a lot of the stuff that they talk about back then, like
the Black Panthers or Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, different. See, I don't even want to say them. You can take it back to Harriet Tubman, you know, W.E.B. Du Bois. It's funny because we all have the same movement, but along the lines, when we start to move in that direction, throughout history, we have always been stopped by either ourselves or an outside environment. But when I saw that, it just spoke to me.
Nah, I see. It seemed very carefully like handpicked by you. That's why I asked. Man, to feed off of what you just said, bro, I feel like, yeah, it's either stops by an outside force or us. Another thing I think, too, is we seek compromise, and that stops our movement. We don't really go for what we deserve, which is full 100% rights and open opportunity and freedom. I feel like when we truly do seek that, and that is what we seek, then they stop us as an African independence, you know? Because in African independence, that's really what it was. They wanted economic freedom. They wanted, like, the colonizers to really just release that hand, that grip. And that's when they got stopped. As far as the African-American struggle, I feel like that was the goal of every major African-American leader. Then once they knocked every single one of them off, then it was compromise, you know? Okay, we're gonna give you guys this, you know, like for instance, the Civil Rights Bill, 1965. It was compromise. It's not granting you anything. It's just all compromise, man.
What did they call the one when we were still slaves? The three-fifths compromise?
Three-fifths compromise. Oh, see, exactly. That's even in it. That's just what it is, man. It's either just a complete stop here, or when we get past that level to where they really see it, to where we can really get it. That's when they want to compromise. And sadly, we're dumb enough to accept the compromise. Or maybe not even, let me not say dumb enough, because I think that's a little bit too harsh. Because I feel like, you know, this is real life. People are scared. You know, people don't want to die. They don't want to give, you know, people just want to live their lives with their families, raise kids, you know, pursue ambition. So they're willing to compromise. But I think that hurts more in the end.
It does. I was about to say the exact same thing. It does, because that's okay for right now, you know. But the fact that you have to look at the fight through those people's eyes who died. Like when you die, when you were able to lay your life on the line for a cause, compromise don't exist. Compromises aren't the goal, you know. Your goal is A. But you'll get to almost A and be okay. You know, no, we have to go all the way, period.
All the way. It's interesting, man. So lately I've been watching videos on the Cuban Revolution, just really tying that into just Latin American revolutions in general, honestly, just tying that into what blacks need to be now, you know, and just even African independence videos, man. And a lot of those leaders at that point weren't willing to compromise. They just wanted, they said, back off, you know, this is our land. We're going to govern our people. We're going to move in our own direction.
You know, through that, though, is when they find compromise, you know, because you have to be determined. You know, you gotta put it out there. You gotta say, no, I'm not compromising nothing. I'm out, period. We going there. And then you'll find that it's not you that has to compromise. It'll be the other party.
Yeah, I think we need to look at it at the ball is in our court. You know, and we're going to get into that. But the ball definitely, if at any point in time is in our court, it is in our court as of 2017. Is that not right, Black Alpha?
Oh, that is hitting the nail on the head right there, man. Because Migos dropped that album, Culture. Mm-hmm. We are the culture. I don't want to say it because it sounds corny, in my opinion. But it's the truth. It's really the truth. Like who have you seen on TV, right? Who influences your daily life? Who influences society's daily life? More than likely, at least 70% of those people are black millennials. You see what I mean? But right now, we're not where we should be. Because if we were,
I should say, if we were, if we had that unity, if we had that, if we had it, we would be dry. Like these killings, like stuff that we see and we're not happy with, those wouldn't be happening because we really have the ball. We really got the ball.
No, I feel you. I know what you're saying. And it's so crazy because even though we do have this ball and this influence, it definitely is like two sides to the coin as far as black millennials go. You know, I look at, for instance, let's pick three black millennial stars random off the top of my head. Kyrie Irving, Ezekiel Elliott, Chance the Rapper. Just random first three that popped in my head.
I'll tell you another three. LeBron James, Currency, Wiz Khalifa.
Okay. So just basing off my three, man, these are three young black kids, you know what I'm saying? Not even kids, let's just say young adults that are, you know, in their early 20s, have so much influence. They, you know, they have such immense of a following, kind of like a cult-like following as far as like sports fans go or music fans go. Then on the flip side, on the other side of the coin, you have black millennials who are seen as thugs, gangsters, hooligans, who are being killed in the streets, who are, you know, labeled from birth as scum. You know, even you look, man, like recently they had this this whole Michael Brown video resurfacing and people getting angry. And, you know, I mean, I remember what people were saying about him. You know, I don't know the man. It just seems like, you know, they were just being very overly critical of his lifestyle and who he was more than the actual events that transpired. And I think that is the double sided coin to being a black millennial. It is like we have all this immense potential and, you know, we have this potential to have this following and we do have this sort of some type of attraction to us at the same time that we do have that stigma on us as well.
When we learn to play the game, that will come. You know, I think we'll find it a little easier to maneuver. But my mother always told me that to change the game, I got to be in the game, you know, and there's no other way to get in the game than to play by the rules. As much as I don't, anybody who knows me knows I don't, you know, mainstream media, corporate, all that. Like, I'm not really, that's not really what I do. But at the same time, I understand that there, you need to understand the value of those systems. Like, institutional, like discrimination, racism, stuff like that still exists today because it's institutionalized. It's not so much in society more, honestly. But nowadays, it's so institutionalized to where it's like the person doesn't have to be racist, you know? The person in that position doesn't have to look down on you because of your skin color, because systematically, we're not included.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you, and that's why people, you know, they shout, racism is dead. Though that's very untrue, you know, the doors and the opportunities and, you know, even the window for advancement just still remains just a slither or cracked open in comparison to the majority. And because of it being so institutionalized for hundreds of years, it's perfected at this point. Now, you know, instead of trying to break down a wooden door, we're trying to break down steel, you know, and yeah, man. And just with that being said, you know, it's like, well, what do we do now, you know? And I think that definitely speaks again to the clip, you know, just that mobilizing and moving forward with our reality and realizing what it is and what we must do.
I think that's definitely a question we're going to have to ask ourselves is what are we willing to do now to get what we want to get? It's not going to come tomorrow. It's not going to come by the time Trump gets out of office even, you know, but slowly but surely it will come to us. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, how dedicated are we to this?
How dedicated are we? That is a really good question, because the revolution will be televised. So, hey, stay tuned in. But that dedication, that, you know, that really, I think that's a good thing to bring up, because I do believe that, you know, there have been times in history where black people have been very dedicated and have shown great strides and pushed boundaries through their dedication. Perfect case in point, man. I was reading an NPR article. Shout out to NPR, by the way. That's where I get a lot of my daily news from, man. Shout out to them. Man, I was reading an article about Mountain Bayou, Mississippi, an all-black town founded by freed slaves. Booker T. Washington spoke to those freed slaves. He had told the freed slaves, "You have spent hundreds of years building something that isn't yours. So now it is time to build something for yourself, something you pass down to your children." And they started building. There was marshland. They bought this land as marshland, and they started. They started digging, picking away. They built a town. They built, you know, they had banks. They had clinics. And really what happened was, you know, desegregation happened. Blacks started moving into the urban areas. And now Mount Bayou has, well, I think it was 1,500 people left. It used to be a sprawling town. And that's just what happens. Whenever we do mobilize and we have the dedication, we do, you know, we show that we have great lengths and we push. But then something happens that destabilizes it.
Necessarily, well, I'm not gonna say necessarily, but case in point, like I don't want to sound harsh, but we kind of sell out to the now gratification, you know, like during that time, my co-host told me that it was a lot of that was during the time of industrialization, so a lot of jobs, you know, were in the cities. So it was best for people right then to go to the cities. But if they would have just thought, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, maybe not. Maybe even though that is a good opportunity, that may not necessarily be the best opportunity.
You know, and I agree wholeheartedly, man. One issue, I mean, we could even tell us, say, black millennials now, how the past, you know, ties in with the present. You know, we're so into the instant gratification, man, the chains, the cars, all that stuff. I mean, you could drive off the lot, you know, people talk about paper plates, you know, icy chains, water, you know, people dripping water. Hey, it's something, this instant gratification, people notice you in the here and now.
How you dripping water and they don't got water in Michigan? That's all I'm going to say on that.
That's very true, man. Oh, well, or either they don't have it or it's extremely dirty, filthy, lead contaminated, and the governor won't go to jail for it either, even if he knows about it.
You know what it is? It's because that's systematic.
Very systematic. It's crazy, man. I drove through Flint last March. I was in Saginaw, Michigan, in Bay City, Michigan, with my homie. And he was like, "Hey, man, you know, we rolled up a couple of joints and we drove around Flint and we just looked and we talked to some people, man. And it was really just eye opening and it changed, you know, a lot of just like how my perspective on America, you know, I'm thinking, how does this exist in such a popping and affluent country, you know? But it does, because like you said, it's institutionalized. You have a place where lower income people live. You know, I mean, this stretches, I even feel like, you know, of course it hurts black people heavy. There are some white people in Flint, you know, and it just hits the lower income. They attack us, it's class division, and they use that to attack us and keep some people well-fed and some others not, sorry.
Another point I was gonna bring up in that realm was the case about Henrietta Lacks. Was how basically they use her cells to do research on cervical cancer. And her family never knew for years. For years, you take a dead person's cells, you study them without notifying anybody of relation, you know, and they profit off it. They're not doing this. Why do you think they're doing this research? You know, they're not doing this for fun. Exactly. It's always going to be a means to an end. So the fact alone that they can take someone's cells from their body, research those cells, profit from those cells, and the whole time not even tell the family. I mean, the family is black, yes. The woman who died was black, yes. If it was white, would it have happened? That's a real question that we have to ask ourselves. The question may be no. The question may be yes. But the fact the fact alone that I asked the question, you already knew what the answer was when I asked it. You had that feeling.
I think that's the thing too, man. People really have to ask themselves objectively. None of that, well, you know, if either way, nah, it's just like, really, like, if she was not an African-American woman, you know, in the South, she's from Virginia, you know, would this have happened that way? And I don't believe so. Man, just a quick, man, into her, I thought that was incredible how you brought her up. I started reading about her. Just the fact, you know, that her cells were able to divide so rapidly and stay alive for so long in the culture is what, quote-unquote, made her cells immortal. And it's like, man, you know, they use her, they call it HeLa cells. They use that to create the first polio vaccine. They've recreated 20 tons of her cells. This African-American woman. But they don't teach you that in science class. You know, they don't talk about it, but that's so crazy.
But they let us know that there was a cure for polio. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, they will let you know. They'll let you know. And, you know, just as a quick, I don't know who cured polio. I'm pretty sure he was white, though. Let's just, you know, hey, you know, we're going to go back and look at this, you know, and we're going to have a correction on the second episode, you know, if he was. But I'm pretty sure he was, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's just because, yeah, they'll let you know that, but they won't let you know how he was able to do it, you know. But yeah, man, it's awesome. It's important, man. I think that this is going to be good, you know. We have just so many things, you know, we just need to touch on and talk about. By the way, shout out to Jordan Peele. That was a good Black Godfather brought up earlier, man. Jordan Peele is the first Black writer to make $100 million off of a movie. Give that man a hand. Give him a hand. Yes, that's incredible. I think that's very impressive.
I feel like it's even weirder how that is the first one in 2017. We've had all these great actors. People of African-American descent are on TV 24/7 almost. And the fact that he's the first writer in a movie to earn that much money, personally, it raises questions for me. Because I think, you know, like, how is that possible?
I know, man. But I think an example that he does show is that, you know, ownership or just like that originality can bring about something good. Once again, we're talking about that drive, you know. Get Out, you look at it, man, there was like no major actors in it, you know, but there were some really damn good actors, you know, and a damn good, you know, vision for the movie, and that brought about good results. That's more what it's about, man. People want the end result without going through the means to get the end result. And that's why I wanted to shout him out, man, because I think that's impressive.
I think it's that instant gratification we was talking about. I'm sure it's nice when he was writing it, and he was probably questioned if he would ever get it done, you know? But you just got to stick it out. You got to really have that vision. What's the 3 points that you like to say?
Realize, materialize, visualize. Yeah.
Those are all 3 points we must hit.
We must hit them all. Give Black Godfather a hand, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, man. Thank you for the conversation, man. I think it's going to be crazy. It's going to be good, man.
God bless all of our listeners who tuned in to the first episode. If you guys would like to reach the Black Millennial Podcast, please, we're ready to listen to testimonials, opinions, updates on your lives. You can reach us.
Bring it all.
Yes, bring it all. You can reach us at Black Millennials Podcast, BL, erase the A, CK Millennials Podcast at gmail.com. Again, erase the A, BL, CK Millennials Podcast at gmail.com. We will check that daily.
I just want to thank everybody, too. I appreciate it.
Yeah. No, your support is very much appreciated. Once again, I'm Porter Prince.
Black Godfather.
Out.